An unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Good evening. I want to thank Tim for the invitation to give a Dharma talk. As you probably know, Tim takes a 1 month sabbatical every year. Often, Tim's time away is hard to discern. He's around anyway, attends meetings, sends emails, and spends extra time on our programs. This year, he might actually go on a bit of vacation. Anyway, during Tim's sabbatical, the rest of us have an opportunity to work together on some interesting topics. And the topic of this month is going to be the paramitas. Tonight's talk is the first in a series of 6 talks. The paramitas are also known as the 6 perfections, namely generosity, ethical conduct or morality, patience, joyful effort, meditation, and wisdom. The paramitas are one of the foundational Mahayana teachings. And a brief FYI, the Theravadin tradition has 10 paramitas. So if you really want to study this or go for the extra emphasis or extra merit, please look them up and dig a little bit deeper. Fortunately, the last decade has provided us with some excellent books on the subject, which are in order of their publication date: The 6 Perfections, Buddhism, and the Cultivation of Character, by Dale Wright; The World Could Be Otherwise, Imagination and the Bodhisattva Path, by Norman Fisher; Entering the Mind of Buddha, Zen and the 6 Heroic Practices of Bodhisattvas, by Tenzin Webb Anderson. When I started to write this talk, I was wondering when and where the Buddha did teach the paramitas. So the oldest parts of the Pali canon, for example, the Majjhimika Nikaya, the Dika Nikaya, and so on, do not mention the paramitas as a category anywhere. There is no thing called paramitas in the Buddha's time. He does spend a lot of time speaking about the 6 paramitas individually, but not as a grouping. Some scholars even refer to the teachings of the paramitas as a semi-Mahayana teaching added to the scriptures at a later time in order to appeal to the interests and the needs of their community, or to make their sect more popular. More recently, scholars have started to open up early Mahayana literature, which is tending towards the very ascetic, and they expound the life of they expound the ideal of the monk's life in the forest. So the practice of the paramitas in Mahayana Buddhism may have been close to the ideals of that ascetic tradition. But let us circle back to those 3 book titles for one moment. Cultivation of Character, imagination, heroic practices? Are we even talking about the same teachings? I'll let you in on the secret up front. Yes, we are. The practice of the perfections reaches so far and wide that nothing is left out. But before I get any deeper into the paramitas, we need to remove one stumbling block that is bound to trip us up, and that is the word perfection. So we are not allowed to use the word perfection to use it and beat ourselves up with it by creating an impossible ideal that no one, absolutely no one, can ever reach. So I did a little bit of digging again, this time with the help of Wikipedia. And the etymology of the word paramita is rooted in the word parama. And parama means highest, most distant. And so it leads to chief or primary, which then leads to most excellent. And now we have, as a translation, excellence and perfection. Like the Bodhisattva vows, like saving all beings, we can consider this perfection as an aspiration and not something we must reach. Another etymology divides paramita into para and mita, with para meaning beyond and mita meaning that which has arrived, or ita meaning that which goes. Paramita then is that which has gone beyond, or that which goes beyond or transcendent. So, for example, the first paramita, dana paramita, could be translated as perfection of generosity, or transcendent generosity, or generosity beyond generosity. By now, we've probably noticed that this kind of generosity has very little to do about tossing some spare change into the bucket of a homeless person. We're not talking about helping those poor schmucks, because without me, they'll never make it. In other words, we're not talking about charity. Dana paramita is being grounded in the reality of things as they really are, in the oneness of giver, receiver, and gift. We receive and we give our life and our practice wholeheartedly. That is the kind of generosity we hopefully will talk about tonight. The big question is this: what does that mean in real life? What does this unlimited giving mean, and how can one do it? The first way of giving is the one we are mostly familiar with: material things. That's the conventional way: stuff or money. The second is the gift of fearlessness, which is our practice. And the third way of generosity is sharing the Dharma, the gift of Dharma. Conventional giving is the one that we do most often. And it's a perfect place to encounter what we need to develop our practice. We encounter our small-heartedness, our stinginess, and our greed. They come up when we think about giving something away, making a donation to the food bank that smarts a little because it's so big, because people need it. Please welcome these feelings. Be aware of them, and especially don't hide them from yourself. They are valuable markers and guideposts. Please don't give gifts resentfully to hide your own stinginess from yourself. Just tell yourself, this is good for my practice. Okay, that's a bit of an insider joke. At practice centers like Tassajara, that sentence comes up all the time. And you hear everybody tossing it about. Every time when someone voices resentment or dissatisfaction, one of the practice leaders is going to say, it's good for your practice. But the first time I said it, I started to laugh so hard, I almost fell off the bench. And the other person caught the bug too. For the rest of the practice period, just the words, good for your practice, were enough to send us into fits of giggles. And so, of course, the key was just before Zazen starts to say, it's good for your practice. But I digress. Next is the gift of fearlessness. And we can take that two ways. Often teaching someone about meditation is called the gift of fearlessness, because that is what allows us to see inside ourselves and see where our fear is. And has anybody ever noticed that fear is always about the future? So imagine you're at Yellowstone and you're going along hiking, and all of a sudden you see those big old bear paw prints right on the muddy path. You feel this surge of energy, of fear. So we're not afraid of those paw prints, right? They're just there in the mud. Doesn't bother anybody. It's about, where is the bear that left these paw prints? Okay, so you keep on hiking. You turn around the rock, and there's a grizzly. Now we really feel it, right? It has nothing to do with seeing the grizzly bear. He's just standing there. Question is, what's that bear going to do once he stops standing there? And then those big fake charges that the bears like to do comes right at you, and your heart jumps like out of your chest. It's not the running itself, because you're perfectly fine at that point, right? It's what happens when that bear and you are getting really close. And then the bear kind of plays into you and bites you. And that hurts like hell. But that's not the fear. The fear is, when is he going to stop biting? So it's fear is always projecting into the future. And meditation does help us to deal with those projections. We still have them, at least I do, I see them as for what they are, protection. Also, the other question is, if we have perfected our generosity, if we are willing to give everything, what can anybody else take? You may know that I'm quite in love with Shantideva, so I hope you don't mind if I read a couple of stanzas from his book, Way of the Bodhisattva. That I must give away my life and limbs, alarms and frightens me. If so you say, your terror is misplaced. Confused, you fail to see what's hard and what is easy. For myriads of ages, measureless, uncounted, your body has been cut, impaled, burned, torn, for times past numbering, yet none of this has brought you Buddhahood. The hardships suffered on the path to Buddhahood are limited in their extent and likened to the pain of an incision made to cure the harms of inward ills. And all our doctors cure disease by means of bitter remedies, likewise, to destroy a vast amount of pain, we should be patient with our little hurts. Now comes my favorite, one of my favorite stanzas. Our guide instructs us to begin by giving vegetable greens or other little things that later, step by step, the habit once acquired, we may be able to donate our very flesh, to give up our life. So the last gift, type of gift, is the gift of Dharma. Sitting, walking, standing, or lying down. The gift of Dharma mostly includes being utterly ourselves and giving the same space and generosity to others. It means accepting the gifts of practice, which are the understanding of impermanence, no self, and dukkha, which some might call suffering. Now I'm going to read a little piece of a koan out of Reb Anderson's book, Entering the Mind of Buddha. And it's case 41 in the Book of Serenity. And it is called Luo Pu, About to Die. When the Zen teacher Luo Pu was about to die, he had a deep and difficult conversation with an elder monk named Yankong. At the end of the conversation, Yankong said, "I don't understand." Luo Pu said, "You should understand." Yankong said, "I really don't." Luo Pu shouted and said, "How miserable!" Another monk asked, "What is the teacher's meaning?" Luo Pu said, "The boat of compassion is not rowed over pure, smooth waves." Thereupon, Luo Pu died. And Reb Anderson's commentary is, "The turbulent waters of our life are calling for compassion. In such cases, we begin the practice of compassion by welcoming the rough, impure waves surrounding us. When we find ourselves surrounded by waves of negative judgment and fear, it is possible to say, thank you very much. I have no complaints whatsoever. The vast ocean of affliction is where we are being called to row the boat of compassion. But back to the perfection of generosity. Attitude is the climate of our lives. I'm not talking about the weather, the hailstorm that ruined our plans, but the big picture of our life. Like the water the fish swims in, but can't talk about. Don't know if you ever thought about this. There are two reasons the fish can't talk about water. One, he's been surrounded by it all lifelong. So he really can't tell that it's a separate substance. It's too much part of his life. Two, no matter how you look at it, fish don't talk in human language. So maybe this attitude also depends on our character. How do we fill the spaces in our life? What shape, color, texture does this act of filling the empty spaces have? Are we loving the gifts that life provides? Are we bowing to them and say, I have no complaints whatsoever? Are we seeing our complaints when we utter them for what they are and say thank you to that too? Are we surrounded by beauty or obstacles? When a friend receives a promotion or a dream job, can we be happy? Can we experience sympathetic joy? Or do we think, I should have won the lotto? Do I think, I'm so much smarter than my friend, I should have got the job, that promotion? Or can we just be happy? This is the place of our practice, and this is our training ground. Remember, our mind spews out thoughts all the time, nonstop, often even without us noticing. All these hooks float by with bait, and we are not compelled to bite them. Then the special hook comes along with the bait that is engineered just for me. So I take it, and the bite of the hook in my mouth tells me, this is where I need to pay attention. This needs more work so I can get out of my own way. And we can only do this if we pay attention to what thoughts and what emotions arise. One last little bit from Norman's book, The World Could Be Otherwise. And it is about our practice, about Zazen. In fact, meditation practice is the best way I know to cultivate the expansive attitude of generosity. It is, of course, possible to sit down in meditation, trapped into yourself, obsessed with your thoughts, worries, and the constrictions of your situation. To practice the perfection of generosity in meditation is the opposite of this. When you practice the perfection of generosity in meditation, You open up your fear and anxiety soften and dissolve, and you sit in the middle of the great gift of limitless, imaginative life. How do you do it? Sit down in meditation posture and come into connection with your body and breath. Let yourself relax and focus your attention not so much on your thoughts, feelings, or sensations as on the spaciousness that surrounds them. Mind or awareness itself is white without boundary. With this white openness, always there, though you may not have noticed it before, thoughts and feelings arise and pass away. Some of them you like, some of them you don't. Usually you are focused on the feelings and thoughts. Now shift your focus a bit. Let thoughts and feelings slip into the background and allow the background spaciousness to come forward. Settling down and paying attention to body and breath will absorb the free-floating anxiety that is usually there in your mind without you knowing it. This enables you to relax and go into that generous spaciousness. Sit in the midst of it. You can say to yourself, this is life, body, breath, and consciousness. I share it with everyone and everything. It holds and protects me. In this way, meditation will open up your attitude little by little over time. It's a process. It won't help to try to measure progress. The effort to measure and accumulate progress is already small-minded and stingy. It already assumes you don't have enough and that you need more. Instead, be willing to keep sitting like this every day, and bit by bit, you will be able to see some daylight in your basic attitude that wasn't there before. Patches of blue sky peeking through the clouds. So I hope you enjoyed these words on how Norman, as we go about challenging our stingy attitudes. And he encourages us through that to continue with our perfect generosity. I hope these words on Dana Paramita have offered something to you. If they did not, will you please utterly forget that I spoke them? You may also have noticed that I did not address how to apply Dana Paramita to our current times of Black Lives Matter, COVID-19, climate change, unemployment, social or physical distancing. Those are the questions I would like to hand to all of you for all your days to come. Please bring up your compassionate self and see where your generosity will take you. May our intentions equally extend to every being and place, with the true merit of Buddha's words. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to end them. Buddha's path is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.